High FM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Let's change direction for a minute and talk about our food. You know, as a community, we're pretty much food obsessed. But food is a very important part of culture, social, our social activities. It becomes part of our own family culture. And yet, we are so removed from where our food comes from. You know, if you think back to our grandparents, our great-grandparents, if they wanted to eat meat, they had to slaughter that chicken, that cow, that whatever it was. They understood the impact of eating meat. Today, we just go to a supermarket, we take something off the shelf, and boom, that's it. But we really are very, very removed from where our food comes from. And I'm not sure that it's right. But you are welcome to disagree with me. And you know how to do that. 34519 on the SMS line or on Telegram 061-895-1019. China recently put out a statement that they have successfully cloned 3 cows to make vastly more milk than normal cows. These are called super cows. These 3 cloned cows can make up to 18 tons of milk per year. Now, as I mentioned earlier, you may or may not have heard it. Do you ever think about the fact that only pregnant cows give milk? Non-pregnant cows can't give milk. And that's why, you know, milk cows are always pregnant. So that is already a level of genetic engineering, I suppose, or genetic manipulation, rather. I wanted to have this conversation and just understand, you know, what is the moral, what is the ethical line? And so we've invited Dr. Hilette Lambrechts, a senior lecturer and researcher in the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Stellenbosch. She's joining us. Good morning, Hilette. How are you?
Good morning, Cassie, and to all the listeners. I'm well, and you?
All right. Thank you. Happy I'm not a cow, though.
Yes, to a certain extent, but they also play a very important role in our food security.
Oh, no question. No question that they do. I mean, all right, let's talk about this, you know, about the genetic manipulation. How much of our live food, you know, our live produce is actually genetically manipulated?
Cassie, that's actually quite a loaded question. I would rather like us to stick to the cloned calves, because with my conversations yesterday with Harry, I realized that I think there's a few misconceptions regarding this article in Business Insider that needs to be clarified. And if you don't mind, I'd like to do that.
Well, let's do that, and then let's talk about also, and just to put us in touch with our food, you know, to find out how manipulated is it. But let's start with what you need to clarify.
Yeah, so the article basically reports on 3 calves that have been produced from cloned material from so-called super cows that can produce up to 18,000 liters in their lifetime. Now, or per year. Now, this, or 18,000 tons, that equates to 18,000 liters. Now, it surely is, from a physiological point, possible, but one needs to recognize the fact that when we work with our production animals, and this is something that we...
Sorry, Hilette, can I just ask you, I'm not sure why, but you're fading in and out. Are you moving around?
No. Is it better now?
Yeah, it's just, as you were speaking, you kind of, you know, it's getting louder and softer. Okay.
Yeah, so basically from an animal well-being and animal production point of view, it is important to recognize that the ability of a dairy cow to produce milk is driven by 2 things. Her genetic makeup, in other words, her genes will determine her capability to produce milk and how much milk as well. And then what we do as stockmen or managers with that cow under production conditions determine, in other words, do we feed it properly? And do we understand the influence of, let's say, heat stress have on her physiological processes that allows her to make milk. And we need to understand the relationship between the genetics and the physiology of that cow in order to manage her to produce as much milk as she can. Now, certainly from a milk production point of view, it is certainly possible for a dairy cow to produce 18,000 liters in a year. But when we maintain our dairy animals, we also need to do it from a, let's call it a conscious point of view. And what I mean by that is we need to really consider the animal's well-being. Because if you're going to push her to produce 18,000 liters simply because she can, you are really going to exhaust her body systems. And where you, for instance, can keep a cow up to 5-6 years, and it may sound to the public maybe a very short time, but this is roughly the reproductive lifespan of a dairy cow. And on some farms it might be longer, on some farms it might be shorter. But if you are going, even if that animal has the ability to produce 18,000 liters a year, if you're going to push her to the maximum of her genetic ability, you're going to really not take her well-being into account, and she's not going to last long. In other words, she won't be able to give you 5-6 years of production.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if China indicated that they want to create a herd now of 100 of these so-called super cows, they're really not doing it taking the animal's well-being into account. The fact that they can clone, that's not a new thing. Cloning can be done quite successfully. The fact that they can clone these so-called super cows, that's also possible, and they've indicated that. But when you put it in real life, when you put it under production conditions, and if we, as animal producers, we have to really consider our consumers' level of informedness, and we have a duty, not even a responsibility. It's a sort of interlinked, but it's our responsibility and our duty to really take the animal's well-being into account. You can't just turn that animal into a, I know there's a lot of debate also on factory farming, yeah, when we get to the poultry industry and things like that, but from just going back to this particular so-called super cows, it's really not, they've proven that we can, but like I say, from a rolling it out into industry, really producing milk that consumers will be willing to buy, we need to really manage that animal within its genetic constraints, and also from a management point of view, with animal well-being first and foremost.
Hillet, who decides on what is moral and what is ethical around animal management and food management?
Kathy, we can debate about this topic. There are different, there are always differences of opinion regarding this. From our point as animal scientists, we have a duty to train our students and to do research that we can allow our people in industry, our animal producers, regardless of species, to produce food with an ethical, from an ethical point of view, and with that I mean that you understand the species that you're working with, and that you allow that animal to produce as optimal and normally as possible within the genetic constraints. So you really need to understand how to feed that animal. And if you do make a change on management level, you need to understand how that management decision will impact on that animal's well-being and ultimate ability to produce. Now, why do I say this? This all ties into food security. And it doesn't really matter if you're a mega farmer or a commercial, let's say medium-scale farmer or emerging farmer. The species stay the same, the behavior stay the same. So getting back to who decides what is moral or not, we have within our larger discipline, there are people that specialize in animal behavior. Temple Grandin is probably the world's best animal behaviorist, and especially when it comes to production animals. And she really spent a lot of time in quantifying how animals behave normally and abnormally under production conditions. So we normally use her scientific documentation to train our students that they can discern, is my animal happy or is he or she not? And what do I need to make sure that they are happy? Because if you don't manage your animals according to the behavioral constraints, it is, I can promise you or guarantee you, it's going to manifest in compromised production, and then the sustainability viability of your production operation becomes compromised. So it ties into a bigger picture. Who decides what is the best or not? We have people that are considered experts in that opinion. I'm not an animal behaviorist, but I know if my animal, one of the species that I specialize in or is a specialist in his ostriches, believe it or not. And I can tell you quickly if a bird behaves in a certain way that he or she is not happy.
Yeah.
Sorry?
No, I was going to say we're actually out of time. So thank you very, very much for chatting to us this morning. That's Dr. Hilette Lambrechts, Senior Lecturer and Researcher in the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Stellenbosch.